today, controversy over government plans for millions of children to return to school. There's lots to say about 2020. It's been a heartbreaking year. What do you think? Confusing, strange, and really unpredictable.
Okay, so look, this is our task for today. Look at this picture.
I definitely did not expect to be trying, like millions of others, to educate my children at home.
Wolf
had a cat. Wolf had a cat.
Very good. And what's
for me, that's meant lots of phonics and a bit of year three maths to help with the shopping.
So what's £7 plus £2?
£7 plus £2 is £9.
It's not a task that always goes to plan.
What is your favourite thing about home learning?
Weekends.
What's yours?
Weekends.
Oh, God, monkeys.
It's not clear yet how long things will be like this for families. Ministers have told primary schools in England to prepare to reopen for reception and years 1 and 6 on June the 1st, if infection rates and testing levels allow it.
But we do want to see children back in school because we know how much children grow and benefit from being in school.
It could be the most significant step towards easing the lockdown so far, but it's been hugely controversial. And now the government is under immense pressure to delay, as unions and some councils say they are unconvinced about safety.
Let's move away from an arbitrary date and work with our schools. Government needs to understand that they need to take local factors into account. If they'd done that from the start, I don't think we'd be in the position we're in today.
And Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland opt to go more slowly.
But it is not going to be the case that schools are back to normal in any way, shape or form this side of the summer holidays.
If it does go ahead, up to 1,500 primary schools are expected to remain closed. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, will millions of children really be returning to school within weeks? Ollie de Botton, you're a head teacher at a large state school in Newham, East London, School 21, with 1,200 children aged 4 to 18. For 8 weeks, schools have been closed to all but the most vulnerable pupils and children of key workers. Right now, you've been told to prepare for some of your primary children to come back as early as the 1st of June. How are you getting ready for that?
I guess with difficulty, I suppose, is the first thing to say. We were joking, actually, with some other head teachers, this sort of wasn't in the training manual because we're just thinking of big things and small things. So the big things are trying to balance the interests of the community, some of whom are very scared about coming to school, the interests of teachers, but the need for children to learn and feel well. And then it's right down to the small detail, like, you know, how are staff going to get into school? How are we going to socially distance parents as they drop off? How are we going to stagger break and lunch time so that we've got pods of 13 or 12 or whatever? So it's a kind of good challenge, but another sense a kind of daunting one.
And are you actually out there with your measuring tape? Are you going into classrooms and measuring it out?
Yeah, tape measures we've got out. We've experienced a sort of hula hoops, so that a child stands in a hula hoop. And with the younger children, it is more challenging.
What do you mean, stands in a hula hoop?
Well, you know those hula hoops in schools that you do with PE? We feel like if a child stands in a hula hoop, they'll stay there for a period of time because they think they're in a circle, is my experience. So if you space out the hula hoops from 2 metres apart, you could do some work, you could do individual fitness in the hula hoops, you could do individual stuff, they could sit in the hula hoop. So that feels like one way to give younger children to keeping them distant.
I mean, those pictures of children in squares in the playground almost made me cry. Yeah. Is that what you think is going to have to happen here?
We're also torn because we want children to play together and be connected, and the children do as well. I mean, one of the things is kind of working out what you need to remove from a classroom. So we've got all these wonderful displays in primary. And you think, well, will the child touch that? Would I need to clean it afterwards? So this kind of sad moment of kind of ripping out stuff of the classroom to work it out. My sense is maybe we're being a bit extra on this, but I sort of think as a head teacher kind of asking parents and staff to come in, I want to feel as though I've done everything I can to keep the environment, you know, as safe as possible without kind of, being honest that, you know, you can't eliminate the risk.
Gosh. And how do you and your staff feel about doing this? Are colleagues happy about it or worried?
Well, I think, you know, for myself, it's just totally mixed emotions. So as an educator, I'm desperate to get as many children back to school as soon as possible. You know, it's a tough area. It's an under-resourced community. And all the evidence suggests that the children we serve, families we serve, are going to be further behind than their more advantaged peers. But as a sort of leader of, you know, the leader of our school community, and as a parent, I worry about the safety. And I think staff are, I mean, I think they, like me, would feel that they really are in education to help disadvantaged young people. But like me, they want to make sure it's safe.
And of course, you're in the middle of a diverse community that has actually had one of the highest death rates in the country from COVID-19. Are parents worried?
Yeah, well, we surveyed and, you know, they'll come back and they're wanting to see what the school is going to be able to do, and we'll share that openly with them, and they have done so far. And, you know, Newham, where we are, is a kind of hard hit area. We'll have to see how many people want to take up the offer.
The government's coming under a huge amount of criticism from teaching unions. Do you think the government has made the right decision, and do you think you've received enough support from them?
There are things that are helpful and there are things that are unhelpful. So what is unhelpful is messages before you've got the details. So what happens is you have a big comms and then the guidance comes the next day or the day after, then it's changed the next day.
What's changing in the guidance?
Well, we had guidance on a Monday about opening schools, including protective measures. I think on Thursday, they sort of tightened the guidance around a couple of things about starting school time. So it feels slightly like a moving picture as far as I can tell. We feel that what helps is a kind of unified front, and it feels like that's what happened in Denmark, where there was the unions and government working together, and from the school and the teachers, kind of that will be helpful for us to move forward together.
Do you worry about the way teachers have been almost demonised in parts of the press?
I do, because it's just not my lived experience over the last 8 weeks. I think the teachers in the school have worked harder than they've ever worked before.
Sally, we've been hearing from one head teacher who, like thousands of others, is going through this really tough process of trying to get children back to school under very difficult conditions. Meanwhile, the unions and councils have been raising concerns. They've faced a really vicious backlash in parts of the media.
When will they learn is the Daily Mail's front page question to teaching unions who are resisting the return of some classes.
But yesterday, ministers insisted they were listening.
Well, I think we've got to listen to what we're being told and also to engage and to persuade and to make sure that the necessary arrangements are in place. But, you know, the government always said that we hoped that the 1st of June would be the date. It was conditional.
What are the concerns?
Teachers are just like all of us, very anxious about the situation.
Sally Wheel is The Guardian's education correspondent.
After being in lockdown, being told it's, you know, it's too dangerous to go out, we've got to stop the virus, suddenly they're being asked to go back into schools and to be with quite large groups of children, up to 15, and to potentially be exposed to the virus. And it's all against a backdrop of a huge lack of certainty about, you know, what this virus is, how children are affected.
We do know that children do become infected.
It is extremely worrying because the numbers are increasing. There are over 200 now across the UK and Europe, kids who have experienced this.
There is the possibility, although it seems slight, that children might transmit it to other children or to staff members. But again, what evidence we have suggests that doesn't happen very much.
The scientific evidence is very... Some unions have described it as flimsy. I mean, it's all just very early days. They only know a very limited amount, and there's a lot of conflicting evidence. Now, the government did arrange a briefing at the end of last week when union representatives met with the government's leading advisers, but almost all the unions came out of that saying they were still unconvinced.
What we've heard today is government scientists saying that children, they think, don't transmit the virus more than adults, but they don't know how much less than adults, if at all less than adults, they transmit it. That's not good enough for us to know how safe it is to go back to school.
It was sounds as though it was quite broad brush, and clearly the government still got some way to go before it convinces all of the unions that there's sufficient evidence there to reassure them that it's as safe as possible and it's reasonable to go back now.
And we should stress this is English schools because Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland are going more slowly.
Exactly. I mean, the government, I think, rather surprised the unions with its June the 1st date.
They made this announcement last night with no consultation with heads or with teachers before making the announcement. It's caused great consternation.
But of course, in Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland, they're not observing that same date.
Nothing would make me happier than seeing our classrooms full once again. But setting a date before we have more evidence, more confidence and more control over the virus would be the wrong thing to do.
And like many schools, Spain and Italy, they may wait until after the summer holidays to reopen.
And while all those discussions are going on, we heard from Ollie that the guidance being given to schools is even changing by the day. Tell us just what is supposed to happen.
Well, I don't envy head teachers trying to find their way through this guidance. A lot of it, the head teachers are saying, is just kind of unworkable.
Children at this age do not understand social distancing. I'd be very surprised if any of them did. We would really struggle with, I would say, 5 children in this space.
I suppose we all accept this is a completely unprecedented situation and everyone's grappling to find, you know, a reasonable way through it. But the kind of framework that I think head teachers are working with at the moment is the school day is going to look very, very different. You know, very carefully sort of monitoring children as they come in. I think some schools have already been using thermometers. Children will supposedly be taught in small groups with one teacher. A lot of the toys are going to be taken away because they present too much of a risk.
Does it smite your heart a bit that this is all going to have to go?
Not just a bit. We're asking them not to interact with each other, not to play together. Is it childcare, or are we still continuing to develop those children?
It sounds like it's going to be a really, really difficult time for teachers to manage.
The years that are due to return are reception in year one, so ages 4 to 6, and then year 6, the final year of primary with 10 and 11-year-olds. Why those year groups?
I think the logic behind it is that these younger children stand to lose the most by not being in school. Year 6, it's all about preparing them to go on to secondary school, which is a very difficult transition period. So that's the government logic. And other countries have done the same, sent their youngest children back in. But another explanation might be that those youngest children who cannot be left at home on their own are keeping working parents at home. And it seen as a way of getting working parents back out so the economy can get running again.
And it's not just the unions that are worried, is it?
No. A number of councils are starting to write to parents to advise them not to expect their schools to open on June the 1st. In some cases, it will be for sort of very practical reasons. Maybe, you know, schools have done risk assessments or staff surveyed their staff and there simply aren't enough staff to sort of run the school safely. In other cases, in places like Bury, Liverpool.
We know that there's an infection rate by a virus that infects by stealth. And I want to make sure that children that go into school don't infect one another. This isn't looking for confrontation with anybody.
There may be further issues with infection rates, which are still too high, and it's not time to go back to school.
Our rate of infection is double of that in London. So whilst it might be appropriate to open schools in various places, right now in the North East, we don't feel that it's safe to do so.
Coming up, why ministers say it's urgent to find a way for children to return. Sally, you've just talked about the concerns of councils, and clearly yesterday the government was keen to stress that it's listening to those worries. In terms of why they want schools to reopen, the economy is obviously one reason, but the argument they keep repeating is around the impact the lockdown has had on disadvantaged children.
Yes.
The poorest children, the most disadvantaged children, the children who do not always have the support they need at home, will be the ones who will fall furthest behind if we keep school gates closed.
We know that children are losing out so much schooling, which is really damaging for all children, but it's particularly disadvantaged children who are going to lose out, and they're going to lose out very dramatically. And to be fair, it's not just the government saying that. We've had the Children's Commissioner coming out and saying that, and many, many other people in the sector.
Figures from the educational charity the Sutton Trust show a third of pupils are taking part in online lessons while schools are closed. But that falls to just 16% of working class pupils. And when it comes to online learning, just 23% of schools in the most deprived areas had an online platform for pupils to receive work.
There's a huge amount of concern as the weeks have gone on, as we know that vulnerable children aren't taking up school places that have been set aside for them, as we learn how little disadvantaged children are able to access the online learning that is there, how varied that the quality of that is, when we know how even a school holiday, summer holiday, can set children back substantially. I mean, these are kind of legitimate concerns.
And they're talking about safety as well, because there are concerns about whether or not domestic abuse might be rising during this period.
Indeed, yes. I've sort of kept in touch with directors of children's services during this time. And at the beginning, certainly, referrals dropped off by as much as 3/4. I mean, sort of 75% fewer alerts being raised.
And lots of people talk about an income divide, but there are other divides here. There's a divide between parents who are time rich and poor, or who are more or less able to engage with their children's work.
Yes, that's absolutely right. I mean, some parents are, you know, struggling to work at the same time. They may be required to leave the house to go to work. I talk to some parents and they're really quite enjoying the process of being so involved in their children's education. They're learning a lot themselves. But I mean, for an awful lot of people, it's a very different set of circumstances and kind of impossible, I would imagine, to, you know, be able to educate children in any way that kind of, you know, resembles school. It'd be absolutely impossible.
Ollie, people are really worried about the attainment gap. You're looking at this in quite a deprived community. It's going to be a big worry, isn't it?
It is going to be massive. And I think there's a real challenge for schools, because although we're doing online interactive lessons, it's less time. It's very hard to imagine that any child in the country will have covered what you reasonably would have expected them to have covered if they were in school. My sense is that I think where the gaps will be most felt are at the bottom end of the school. So those kind of early years where you do need to socialise, that's how you kind of learn. You're learning through play and all of that. And year one curriculum's really important because of the phonics and the early reading. That feels that will be missed, and we know the early reading is crucial for everything else that follows. And then at the top end of the school, so that's the year 12, they need to be kind of revising for what we call them UCAS exams at the end of year 12. What does that mean? But they've had less content. And then for, you know, year 10s into year 11s, I worry about, you know, if the government is saying, which they currently are, that the GCSEs next summer are going to be unaffected, I mean, that feels very challenging. And that will really, I think, will exacerbate the achievement gap, because you'll see in those exams next summer, you'll see that achievement gap, you know, widen significantly.
Wow. Is there any way you can minimise that impact?
I think you'd probably think, well, okay, we've got less time. Might it be better to secure core qualifications? Might it be better to secure English, maths, science, and, you know, in my view, a core qualification would be a creative subject. So that might be fewer GCSEs, but maybe completed. What I don't think any school needs is to feel that next summer's exams are going to be make or break for their career, because their lead table position will go down or their Ofsted rating. It just feels counterproductive.
Okay, but during this period, which has clearly been difficult with children of key workers in school and most pupils at home, what have you done to try to limit the disruption?
With the online learning, we started in a very ambitious way. We've invested in one-to-one devices for every child from year 7 upwards. And we kind of thought that the COVID thing was coming, so we'd sort of practiced that. It's fair to say we had massive teething problems in that first week. I mean, how to use Google Chat, and obviously you had normal things in the classroom, like the kids who didn't behave properly. You had, so we just learned loads in that sort of couple of weeks before the Easter holidays. you know, it's developed in a way I couldn't imagine. So now you've got year 11s doing a course from Eton, you've got year 10s doing kind of GCSE work, year 12s.
A course from Eton?
Yeah, so Eton opened up their online learning. So we thought, well, we'll have that. But then it's just grown. So we're doing assemblies, we've done interactive coaching sessions. I don't know why, but it sort of galvanized teachers. The minute you kind of loosen the timetable, the creativity just comes absolutely running back. Now, fundamentally, teaching, I think, is a creative profession, and sometimes the system makes it less possible to be a creative practitioner, and I think this has unleashed it, and that's been just, you know, it's kept us all going, and as a kind of, it's been, you know, it's been energising.
That sounds great, especially giving iPads to kids who won't have access to computers, but it's probably quite unusual, and surely for younger kids, this demands quite a lot from their families. What have your expectations been for parents?
Well, we started just a little bit too high. But very quickly, we got the feedback, which is just like, I'm trying to work. Like, I'm trying to manage this crisis. And we've moved to a sort of offer rather than impulsion. And actually, I think that's helped. But I think, you know, as a teacher, I certainly think it's clear in my household that the kind of my child's only at nursery, but it would definitely be rated pretty inadequate if you think about the kind of the output we're doing. And I think that's totally fair. You know, the kind of, I don't think anyone really should feel pressured to do that. It's just trying that the school is offering if parents want to take it.
Did you just give your family situation an Ofsted rating, Ollie?
Yeah, I mean, inadequate. I mean, if there's a category below that, I think it would be.
Obviously, this has been a little extra insight into what my children learn at school. And, you know, my children are in primary school, but year three grammar, I'm going to be honest with you, Ollie, is something that I've struggled with here. I mean, I'd never even heard of an adverbial fronted clause before the COVID crisis struck. Is the level of grammar they're expected to learn a kind of Michael Gove legacy? And do you think that has an impact on the creativity of your kids?
Well, I mean, my answer to that is absolutely yes. I mean, you know, absolutely 100% children need to be literate and be fluent readers and confident speakers and great writers. But that's not the same thing as the arcane minutiae of grammar. And what it does, I mean, if I can speak openly, it does have a pernicious effect on the curriculum. It kind of narrows it down to the small minutiae of detail that a teacher will need to teach. You end up hitting the target and kind of missing the point. So, look, if one of the lasting legacies of this is that parents say, hang on a second, I'm not sure this is the right curriculum and I'm not sure this is the right testing regime, you know, sign me up. I absolutely agree with that.
Sally, the initial deadline of June the 1st is now 10 days away and the pressure has really mounted. Yesterday, ministers said they were listening, stressed that the date always carried conditions and wasn't arbitrary. A government scientific advisor suggested that our testing and tracing system must be up and running before the lockdown is eased.
Our scientists have been very clear in our advice that changes to lockdown, as we modelled them, need a highly effective track, trace and isolate system to be in place.
Even if all those hurdles are overcome, are there lots of schools that simply won't be able to do this in less than 2 weeks?
I mean, I think head teachers will be doing everything they can to get those children back to school that the government's identified. We're already hearing from certain councils that they're not going to make that deadline. And I don't think it's anything ideological. I think it's more the kind of practicalities. They're doing kind of risk assessments in schools and they're kind of saying parents shouldn't expect necessarily to go back on June the 1st, but we're aiming more for, you know, possibly June the 8th. So I think the government's probably allowed for some kind of, you know, flexibility. I mean, it's a big ask.
Finally, at the weekend, Michael Gove talked about the need for teachers to look to their responsibilities.
If you really care about children, you will want them to be in school, you'll want them to be learning, you'll want them to have new opportunities. So, you know, look to your responsibilities.
He said teachers would be absolutely safe in schools.
So we can be confident that provided the right measures are in place, that teachers and students will be safe.
Although when pressed on it, he admitted that the only way to be totally safe is to stay at home.
Well, the only way ever to ensure that you never catch coronavirus is to stay at home completely.
What will it mean if this goes ahead? And that it's very quickly clear that it is putting teachers and heads at risk of contracting COVID and perhaps even losing their lives to it.
You know, around 2 million children will be going back to school. Some of them may have the virus. We've been told that the evidence that they're less likely to transmit the virus is not totally convincing, basically because there just isn't enough evidence. So, I mean, there are lots of legitimate fears. And if we tragically do get cases of transmission, then we will see, you know, the government sort of having to close schools again, I imagine, or head teachers taking that decision of closing schools. Yeah, it's going to be one of those watch and wait and fingers tightly crossed that all goes well. And this is, you know, we have the best case scenario rather than the worst.
Sally Will, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Anushka.
That was Sally Wheel and Ollie de Botton. We did go to the Department for Education about this episode, and a spokesperson said that they want children back in school as soon as possible because being with their teachers and friends is so important for their education and well-being. They said that plans for a cautious phased return for some year groups from the 1st of June at the earliest were based on the best scientific and medical advice, adding that the welfare of children and staff had been at the heart of all decision-making. They said that they had engaged closely with a range of relevant organisations, including the unions, throughout the past 8 weeks and wanted to continue to do so. That's it for today. My thanks to Ollie de Botton and Sally Wheel. This episode was produced by Rachel Humphreys. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.